Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The winner of the Turing Prize was announced today. The award is considered the Nobel Prize in Computer Science. Google throws in a $1 million cash award, which is especially fitting because had it not been for this year's winner, Google itself would never have existed.
Thank you. My pleasure. It's a great honor.
That is Tim Berners-Lee, this year's Turing Prize winner. Tim Berners-Lee invented the World Wide Web. Yes, you heard me correctly, Sir Tim. For not only is he currently an MIT professor, he has also been knighted by the Queen of England, too, for his achievements. Sir Tim invented the web, that digital space, that world through which so much information flows today, it feels as utterly essential as air. Did the visionary ever imagine back in 1989 that he'd create something that in 2017 millions and millions of people and companies say with a very straight face that they simply could not live without it?
Well, no, of course I didn't. I couldn't imagine that the project would be so successful. I mean, I had some projects which had been kind of successful that kind of worked and some that kind of didn't. So, no. It was designed, you know, I did call it the World Wide Web. It was designed to be universal. The whole point was breaking apart the silos of different documentation systems, if you like. And so the idea was that it could put anything on it. I never imagined that it would kind of have like everything on it.
Tim Berners-Lee is every bit the charming Englishman you're imagining right now. He's 61 and very much like a fountain of ideas, endlessly effervescing thoughts and questions, what ifs and how might we's. Now, you probably want to know the creation story of the web, and we'll give it to you in just a bit, but hang tight, because first, how about the creation story of Tim Berners-Lee? He was born in England in 1955 to a computationally inclined family.
Mom and Dad worked on the first computer to be commercialized in the UK. It was built by Manchester University, and it was commercialized by Franti, the company, and they worked Franti on that team. It was ridiculously exciting, clearly. All the people that they brought home to dinner were all very excited about the idea of a computer because as a programmable thing, the fact that that really what it could do was limited by just the imagination of the program.
I heard you built a computer out of a television.
Yeah, obviously a computer was a goal. And so the first part that I tackled was the input-output, the screen and the keyboard. So I found an old calculator which was semi-mechanical, which had just rows and rows of switches. So I grabbed that out of an old dumpster, and I was sitting right at the bottom of a huge dumpster, quite an operation, and took it home. And then I went down to the TV shop and I asked the guy.
Let me just jump in here for a second to say that the inventor of the web still exudes enthusiasm and excitement for that first computer he ever built, with a couple of old TVs that cost him less than £10. He spent several minutes of our interview walking us through all the details of its construction.
Now, I could have used the same technology of soldering together little integrated circuits to make a computer. I basically knew how to do it. But it would have been an awful lot of soldering. right, it would have been to build. You can build the technology name is called TTL, transistor logic, and you could build a computer out of TTL.
All the way until he finished building the thing in college.
So by the time I was out of Oxford, finished my physics degree, I had this running in the living room, which was really exciting.
Berners-Lee graduated from Oxford University and eventually ended up in Switzerland at the European Organization for Nuclear Research, or CERN, home to the largest particle physics laboratory in the world. This is where the story of the World Wide Web really gets going, because in the 1980s, computers were everywhere at CERN. But they were all different models, running different programs, none of which talked to each other very well.
There's no rule at CERN. Everybody has to use the same sort of computer. So back then, 1989, that meant some people were starting to use these Macs and PCs. Some people were using mainframe computers, those huge things in the hall. Other people used mini computers. And so there was a massive diversity of different sort of computer. And then each one would come with its own way of keeping documents, storing documents, accessing documents. So if I wanted to find out about somebody's project, I'd have to go to their computer and learn some completely new documentation system.
Every single time.
Just every single time. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, everything, of course. And this is why I love the birth story of the web, because ostensibly, Berners-Lee starts off with a very humble goal. Get the computers at CERN to share stuff a bit better, using the existing infrastructure of the internet to link information. So in 1989, Tim Berners-Lee matched his seemingly humble goal with a humbly titled paper called Information Management, a Proposal.
But actually, they're just all looking at pages and clicking on options. And so, in fact, they could all be thought of as hypertext. If you build a, if you think of a virtual hypertext system, you could actually imagine them all being part of this virtual hypertext system. And it wouldn't be that hard, in fact.
Tim Berners-Lee was about to change the world. But first, there was the matter of what to call his new information sharing system. He eventually settled on the World Wide Web, but there were a few other contenders.
I like Mine of Information. The idea, but the problem with that is it was moi. Just sounded a little egocentric. I could have made it The Information Mine.
Or Tim.
But that would have been Tim. I talked about mesh, because it was, the idea was it was a sort of a tangled mesh of all kinds of things. Sounded a bit messy. So mesh and mess were a bit close to each other. So World Wide Web, I liked, because first of all, when you're writing code in those days, it was really useful to start with a letter that people didn't use. So people, you know, one guy had written a whole system where it was called Zebra, where everything started with Z, so it didn't get confused with anything else. That was just a little practical thing. So I thought I could make it all W based. So I called it WWW, and then there was a. It first started sort of having interviews about it. People would call and say, look, our spell check says that worldwide is one world. So it's actually W. Yours is, system is WW. It's not WWW. So I pushed back. Nope, it's WWW. World Wide Web are separate. That's just what it's called. There's a space between the world and the web still there. And that's how it's been.
But let's hop back to that humbly titled original paper, Information Management, a Proposal. Truth is, Tim Berners-Lee knew intuitively from the start that his relatively simple idea was about to change the world. And he describes it as a dream. Just a few years later, in a talk titled Hypertext and Our Collective Destiny, Tim Berners-Lee described, quote, a dream that the web could be an interactive sea of shared knowledge. He said, quote, I imagine it immersing us as a warm, friendly environment made of things we and our friends have seen, heard, believed, or have figured out. I would like it to bring our friends and colleagues closer. If misunderstandings are the cause of many of the world's woes, then can we not work them out in cyberspace? Berners-Lee said he wanted the web to become a realistic mirror, or in fact the primary embodiment of the ways in which we work and play and socialize. And to that degree, it's been wildly successful beyond, you know, any measure, really.
Primary embodiment. Check!
Exactly.
Done that.
But the embodiment of how we work, play, and socialize also includes sort of the darker parts of the human condition. In other words, Sir Tim's dream has also turned into something of a nightmare. The dark side of social media, of fake news, of government surveillance, the loss of control over private information, all the ways in which corporations are once again siloing the information that Berners-Lee had wished to set free with the original open web. That is why on this, the 28th year of the World Wide Web, its inventor is advocating a radical overhaul of his own creation.
So here's what I thought about this, and here's what I think about it. They've changed last year. So what I thought about that, and what I spent 20 years, the first 20 years of the web, telling people what you need to do, keep the internet neutral. Just give everybody unfettered, non-discriminatory access to the internet. Let people build websites. Let them link to each other. Good stuff will happen. And so we fought for net neutrality. We've got net neutrality. We have to fight. May have to fight for net neutrality again. I thought that all we had to do was to keep the net neutral. And then humanity, I have been quoted many times as saying I'm an optimist and I believe in humanity. And I believe that humanity will do the right thing. Now,
still, you're still an optimist.
I am still an optimist long term, but I think that we actually need to do a double take. We need to adjust our strategy. Those of us who feel the world can be a better place, can be more collaborative, that we can. Those original cyber utopian dreams that we will use technology to actually overcome national boundaries and overcome cultural boundaries and learn to love and get on with, collaborate with each other worldwide, they haven't actually happened. And so now, when you look at the web, for one thing, for many people, it's remarkably like the pre-web. Do you remember America Online? AOL
yeah.
Discs, when people used to they used to dial into AOL, and AOL would be their entire world of internet information. It would be email, it would be news, it would be entertainment, it would be games. And it was a walled garden. It was a silo, but it was valuable, and people paid for it and got derived value out of it. But the web came along, the just sheer crazy innovation and creativity on the web blew away any walled garden, and it has consistently blown away any walled garden since. But now people do look around and they look at some of the social networks and they see the same sort of thing. And but also when they look at people using these social networks, they see that in particular social networks, particular things happen, and people who design those social networks are stepping back and they're realizing, whoa, you know, we put in anonymity for the people and for the protesters and for the people who are protesting against oppressive regimes, but now we find it's being used by misogynist bullies, by nasty people who just get at being nasty. So now people who design those networks have to rethink how they're designed to try to make them into places where actually nice things happen.
It's because just last month you wrote a paper saying like the three things that you're worried about are loss of control of our personal data, that it's too easy to spread misinformation, and that political advertising requires or needs transparency and understanding. I mean, my just very brief question is, do you maintain the optimism that technology can be developed to overcome these problems, or do we need to look beyond technology to manage these?
I think technology always works hand in hand with law and regulation. So very important that we use both types of our brain to look at this, both the technical and the social piece to look at it in the future. Am I optimistic? Yes, because actually when you look at history, you know, crazy to imagine the web will just remain as it is. Everybody is right now looking at the way social networks are designed. They're changing them. They're trying out experiments. So people are designing new social networks all the time. People are designing new systems which are decentralized. I am optimistic. But it's only going to happen because lots of people care about it very, very much. And that's not just people writing code. It's people writing laws. And it's people, random people, you know, teachers. And it's people in the street. The people listening to us have to care very carefully about this. And the time may come when they have to step in and say, no, actually, this is a world I want. I don't want a world like that. I want a world like this. And I'm going to fight for it.
Tim Berners-Lee, congratulations again, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Megna.
Tim Berners-Lee is the inventor of the World Wide Web and the winner of this year's Turing Award from the Association for Computing Machinery. It's considered the Nobel Prize for Computer Science. He's also director of the Global Standards Group, the World Wide Web Consortium, founding director of the World Wide Web Foundation, co-founder of the Open Data Institute, and a professor at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. That's where we spoke with him. And by the way, of course, we have a link to Sir Tim's manifesto for a new approach to the web. It's at our website, radioboston.org. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.